interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We're coming to you live from Texas and New York State. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, welcome to Hour 2, Station the Native.
Let's do it, Timbo. I'm ready.
You know, we just heard about the Michigan fake electors investigation. Well, Arizona jumped on the bandwagon today, and a grand jury has indicted 18 Republicans as fake electors. They indicted all the usual suspects, Mark Meadows, Rudy Giuliani, and unindicted co-conspirator number one. I'll give you one guess who that is, Brian.
Donald Trump.
Ding, 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 ding. Nailed it in one.
Yeah, that's a hole in one right there. That's not too bad. Of course, you know, Arizona, what is going on with your elected officials and the people they appoint?
Stolen elections have consequences.
That's right, they do. And you can only cover it up for so long, you know. Which election was it? Remind me, Timothy, where there was some question about George W. Bush's election. It was W, right?
That was 2000. Yeah, it was W against Al Gore in 2000.
And look at the way that sort of, you know, became basically fact after the fact, and people just kind of had to accept it. You know, that was one situation in one state, and then you look at all the situations in all the swing states in 16, in 20, in 22, and now what we're looking at in 24. I mean, this is orders of magnitude bigger than that when it comes to the American public and how they feel about the integrity of their electoral system.
Yeah, I mean, Americans aren't stupid, okay? Now we have a fake electors case in Georgia. We've got one in Michigan. We've got one in Arizona. Cue Wisconsin and Pennsylvania in 3, 2. People see through what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's become so obvious, you know, it's disheartened of some people. It's alienated other people, and it has lit a fire in the belly of many people, you know? So, where those three categories fall on the balance beam, I don't know, but I would argue that, you know, over time, it's just going to become more and more clear, just like looking back at, you know, 2020 or BLM or George Floyd or Antifa or Russiagate or Hunter Biden laptop gate. You know, it's just like all the gates become much more clear with a little bit of time in the rearview mirror. And this is going to be no different. And, you know, it's going to shape the national zeitgeist as time continues.
It absolutely is. And just to put a ribbon on what I was saying about stolen elections have consequences. Of course, the 2022 governor's election was stolen from Kerry Lake, but the Secretary of State election was stolen from Abe Hamada. So these cases wouldn't have been brought if the AG's race hadn't been stolen, the Secretary of State race hadn't been stolen, the governor's race hadn't been stolen, and they were demonstrably stolen. It was only Republican districts where the machines went fluey on Election Day. And Brian, there's another story that I know is just going to shock you. The FBI is reportedly sending tipsters into private chats to bait online users. I'm just shocked.
No crap, Sherlock. This isn't news. I mean, I'm glad to see it in the headlines so the newbies can, you know, welcome to the party, newbies. But this is not new. I got to tell you, it is in hyperdrive, though. It's approaching ludicrous speed.
It really is approaching ludicrous speed, but you're exactly correct. The fact that this is now breaking out, leaking out into the wider consciousness, national consciousness, can only be a good thing ultimately for liberty, Brian, because none of us are anti-government per se, but we're 100% anti what the government's been doing.
Right. Yeah, we're anti-unconstitutional government. I know that might sound like a double negative, but it fits if you do the logic on it. We are anti-unconstitutional governance, legislation, and heavy-handed technocratic globalism. That's all. That's all. And they think they can arrest people for pointing out that we don't have that. They think they can put people on trial for pointing out that that's being taken away.
Well, they want to arrest the little boy that points out that the emperor is actually not wearing any clothes. You're 100% correct.
Yes.
Stay tuned for more State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk TNT.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Speaking of Bidenomics, JP Morgan has announced that Bidenomics is not working and that there's no relief for Americans in sight. Joining us to break it all down is wealth manager to the rich and famous, serial entrepreneurs, pro athletes, and other high and ultra high net worth individuals, Ed Butowski. Ed, great to see you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So just how bad can we expect the economy to get before the election?
Well, I'll tell you, today's numbers were really dismal. And you have to remember that the U.S. economy is supposed to grow at around 3%. That's the goal of the country. And if it's growing less than that, then they would normally lower interest rates to stimulate the economy. And if it's going quicker than that, then they're going to raise interest rates to slow the economy down. So right now, you know, Bidenomics is a disaster because the economy is not growing at 3%. It's growing at 1.6%, which is anemic. And you cannot lower interest rates because you have inflation that you have to offset. So you really kind of have stagflation right now, which is, you know, Biden's gift to the U.S., which is a terrible thing. And it's one of the most difficult economic conditions to get rid of is stagflation. And that's what we're in right now. And that is slow economic growth, high unemployment, and rising prices. And that's what you have right now. And there's no two ways about it. And this is not, you know, from some outside source. It's not because of the pandemic. This is brought on by the policies of the Biden administration.
Ed, I went and filled up my car the other day. And admittedly, I have to put 93 in this car. But it was, even here in Texas, it was $4.26 a gallon. So it's not looking good. I mean, what does that mean it is in California right now if I'm putting 93? Am I still allowed to put 93 in California? I don't know. But I mean, at the gas pump, I'm feeling it this week. What can we look forward to there? Is that going to get any better? Sometimes they bring those prices down before elections. Is that going to happen this year?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the oil prices are a free-flowing market, you know, to kind of, you know, look at it from the standpoint of how oil prices get set. And these oil prices are all set by supply and demand. And the supply is really not as great as it needs to be based on the demand. And the e-market, the, you know, electronic vehicle market is not, you know, anywhere close to what they want it to be. So you're going to start seeing oil prices continue to go higher, especially if we have a bigger activities in the Middle East. But again, this has a lot to do with the Biden administration and their kind of war on fossil fuel. And, you know, and then that those prices also trickle down. So as oil prices go higher, those prices, you know, the additional price of oil gets put onto different products. So you're going to end up paying more at the grocery store for apples and oranges and your packaged goods. So there's a trickle down, you know, feeling that you get from higher oil prices. So I would stop putting 93 in your car if you could.
Oh,
and Ed,
don't make me cry.
Yeah, that leads us into our next story. Hertz today released its quarterly earnings report for Q1, and it's another bloodbath for the car rental company's investors. It lost another $195 million from its gamble on EVs. The company increased the number of EVs that it's going to sell from its fleet by 50% to 30,000 vehicles, up from 20,000, which represents half of the 60,000 EV fleet. And it's going to take a loss on all those sales. Per share loss was three times greater than analysts expected, $1.28 per share, not 44 cents. And the Q1 adjusted net income loss was $392 million, which is more than double the $147 million loss that analysts expected. Stocks were down 20% today in trading. And overall, Hertz's EV gamble has cost it $440 million.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, you can only shove so much of this down Americans' throats. And, you know, you look at Hertz, which is a great company trying to do what the president had laid out for them to do. But it's, you know, they have to report to their shareholders, and their shareholders are not going to be happy with this at all. And it's, you know, just money that has just blown up. So when you talk about, you know, how much money we put into the Green New Deal, you got to start looking at how much money got blown up, you know, by Hertz, and how much is going to get blown up by Avis and so on. You know, but they're trying to play the game, but the game just isn't winnable. It's just not a winnable situation.
Yeah, and to see Jamie Dimon's comments were interesting. I found particularly interesting when he was asked who the best presidential candidate for the economy would be between Trump and Biden. He wouldn't answer. He said, quote, "I'm not going to commit."
Well, you know who he's thinking, and he doesn't want to say it, but you know that he believes Trump would be. Otherwise, yeah, because he's a staunch Democrat, Jamie Dimon. But I'll tell you, it's very tough for a guy like Jamie Dimon to stay on the sidelines. You know, he wants to speak and wants to be out there. And wants to support this country. But, you know, he also has to be very honest with people. And he knows that Trump is the better candidate for the economy without question. I think we all know that. Just look at Bidenomics and look at, you know, the GDP number and look at inflation. I mean, you don't need a, you know, roadmap to figure this out. It's pretty well laid out for you.
Yeah, I think Jamie might have been a little worried about legal consequences if he had been a little more forthcoming. You know, knock, knock, who is it? It's FINRA.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised. They might hit him with election interference if he actually said anything the way things are going. My goodness. So if Donald Trump is elected, what does his team have to look like to get us over the stagflation hump? I mean, let's say, you know, we don't have a giant black swan event and we have a Donald Trump election and we're off into a new administration. What does it look like for them to try to recover from this disaster that's been Bidenomics?
Yeah, that's a great question. Usually the best and only way to get out of stagflation is to increase the balance sheet of the Fed. And that's by printing more money. But you can't do that now. So you'd have to take it from the standpoint of reducing regulations. And that is a huge, you know, we say that all the time, but people don't realize how expensive regulations are to every single business. And that is a tax that is not spoken a lot about. But if you reduce those regulations, you're going to start to unleash the power of the economy. And then you also need to reduce taxes. And that will also unleash a lot of money into the economy. And that's the complete opposite of what Biden wants to do. I mean, you heard that Biden wants to increase the capital gains tax rate to 44%. If you're in the state of California and you pay the state California capital gain tax, you're going to be paying a combined tax of 59% if Biden got his way. I mean, that's just un-American.
And as for the regulations and the cost of regulations, the Supreme Court might weigh in. It's going to definitely weigh in before June. But in the EPA case, if it decides that Congress inappropriately ceded its authority, its rulemaking authority to the EPA, that's not only going to affect that agency, but the entire executive departments. And I think we're going to see a lot of regulations cut by virtue of that Supreme Court decision. But there's been talk, Ed, that the Democrats might realize that Joe Biden is a lost cause, that there's no way they can even steal this election given how badly things are going against him, and that they're going to, quote unquote, allow Donald Trump to win and keep the economy propped up until we get to Q1 next year and then pull the pins and blame Trump and the Republicans for the crashed economy. Do you see any of that as a possibility?
I'll say it's really difficult to forecast out that far what's going to happen. I mean, you know, the Wall Street Journal does a survey every 6 months on the direction of or where interest rates are going to be. And 90% of the time, the direction of interest rates is missed, let alone where it's going to be. So it's a very difficult thing to have anything planned out that far. But it wouldn't, you know, surprise me. But I don't think they're going to let Trump win. I think Trump will win on his own merit just by beating the pants off of Biden based on just facts. And those facts are the economy. And that's what people are really, looking at right now. They're not looking at these lawsuits, although, the press continues to try to, push that up and make that to be, state of mind or front of mind, I should say. But I don't believe that's going to be the case. I believe that Trump is going to win the election and is going to win by quite a bit.
I do, too. We're going to have to leave it there. I'll just say this. I'm not worried about incarceration. I'm worried about a more permanent solution that they might opt for that, because right now he seems like a steamroller. There's no way to stop him. Ed Butowski, thanks so much. You can find Ed on X at Ed Butowski, EdButowsky. Can't wait to see you again right here on State of the Nation, Ed.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
It doesn't matter what you think about the Jewish people. If you don't agree with the IDF murdering women and children, then you are an anti-Semite, of course. This is an extremely dangerous game. Once upon a time, that word actually meant something quite powerful. Actually, it caused people to lose their jobs. It led to politicians losing elections. It led to people's lives being ruined, and sometimes even led to jail terms. Now, it leads to people saying, get lost. There is only a certain amount of times that you can accuse people of being something they're not, and in this situation, those times have definitely passed.
Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, this is a call out to you because you're going to want to get involved now. You'll see that in the title of our next guest's headline, in the headline of his latest. It's called Get Involved Now, Key Contacts, Background Info on Imminent Pandemic Treaty Health Regulations. Joining us now to discuss is Mark Anderson, founder of thetruthhound.com, journalist at UK Column, regular in the Boiler Room, and host of Stop the Presses on Republic Broadcasting Network. Mark, I know you've been sitting in on the WHO meetings virtually. So what's the latest with the WHO pandemic accord talks?
Well, let me start very briefly saying, Brian, and good day to you and your partner, that I covered virtually yesterday a WHO press conference where they really turned up the militant rhetoric and militant pronunciations on vaccines being the answer to all our health problems, whether it's dengue, whether it's malaria, or whether it's something like COVID-19, quote unquote, vaccines are the answer to all our ills. And I've covered several of these press conferences in recent times. I've raised my virtual hand many times and they still won't call on me. I'm like the guy in Welcome Back, Kotter. I'm like, oh, trying to get called on, but they won't call on me. Maybe they don't recognize who I am, or maybe they do, right? So at any rate, I've never heard until yesterday them being so completely monopolistic, one-sided, and militant in their calls to, quote, vaccinate all children everywhere, end quote. This kept coming up, vaccinate everyone everywhere, end quote, along with the centerpiece of it, and that's the great ketchup. And that's not the ketchup you like on your French fries. The great ketchup is to get all the children and adults, especially kids who weren't vaccinated the first round of COVID, and leave no child behind. And I am not exaggerating one iota. If anything, I am understating the case. So this is the mentality as these deadlines for the treaty and the health regs come up, a definite turning up of the volume and the militancy for vaccines being the answer to all our ills.
Wow. Well, Mark, I can tell this is concerning because, you know, you've been joining us periodically throughout this process. And one of the things that we've discussed in previous sessions has been that there's been sort of a, you know, to use your term, globalese around a lot of the initiatives, not a lot of talk about mandates, you know, full mandates, not a lot of usage of the word vaccine, not a lot of usage of the term mRNA. And now we are very close to the next deadline, right? And
right.
If I'm understanding, they've turned the rhetoric up and now all the terminology and jargon that we've been looking out for has appeared.
That's an excellent observation. Up until then, up until yesterday, like we had said, it looked like they were pulling back on the rhetoric, not wanting to look too threatening. Maybe they won't even make the deadline for this treaty, which is still possible. They may not. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to unpack there. And maybe they have a lot of hubris here. But nevertheless, it has changed a lot. They were kind of noncommittal, kind of wishy-washy, not too militant, and all of a sudden the fist is pounding on the table. And it was pretty evident. It was pretty, you know, in your face, including Dr. Michael Ryan, including Kate O'Brien, a couple apparatchiks there at the WHO, and some of their guests, guest doctors, guest academics, and whatnot. So there's definitely a clear-cut mentality that they want all nations and people within nations not to have much in the way of autonomy with medical decisions. In as much as they might say the treaty technically says it will not infringe upon sovereignty. Well, it won't infringe upon sovereignty, as I've said before, until it does, because that's the way the UN system, of which the WHO is a part, operates. It's all a lie. It's all pretense.
Yeah. Yeah. We know how they operate and we understand the globalese because we keep looking at it. And unfortunately, we're having this conversation today because they've changed the rhetoric. And it's almost like a game of Mad Libs. You know, you can take the ambiguous terms that were in the wording before and find and replace basically with no child left behind. This is exactly what we expected to see. Now, you said they wouldn't take your questions. Did anyone else ask any questions that were similar to what you might have asked, or what were you hoping to ask that you were not called on to ask?
Well, I was hoping to ask, for one thing, that if vaccines are such a centerpiece to human health worldwide, what have we learned not only from COVID-19, quote unquote, killing people, but the yellow card data in the UK and the VAERS data in the US? What have we learned about rushing new vaccines, mRNA, which aren't really even traditional vaccines, rushing them to market, giving them emergency consideration, minimal testing at best? What have we learned about the harm they've caused? Since you're making vaccines such an important overall thing, shouldn't we take into account a little bit of caution? Are we going to throw caution totally to the wind here? And I might have said, look, I'm not being anti-vax. I'm being pro-research here. You can't just throw everything at people and expect them to take it. Not everybody can take aspirin. You know, there's common things we buy over the counter or that our doctors might prescribe that are commonly known to be loaded with side effects, and not every person is the same. And even if it's something that most people can take, it's still not something that all people can take. So it's not radical to say, look, some of these vaccines that you say are going to be ready for the next pandemic, and that's what Dr. Michael Ryan was saying, we got to have vaccines in the ready, just ready to launch out like a missile. And, you know, what kind of research and safety testing is going to go into those things with that kind of mentality? And that would have been my main question, among other sundry questions, had I had a chance to ask.
Yeah. Well, boy, I would sure like to have heard that, you know, and been on that Zoom call and heard that question, or at least someone asking some similar questions. Mark, hold the line, and we'll pick up right here after this headline with today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Big news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. Supreme Court expressed skepticism about former President Donald Trump's claim to absolute criminal immunity, but seemed open to the possibility of some limited form of presidential immunity. Scottish First Minister Humza Yousaf has decided against calling for fresh elections after dissolving his coalition with the Green Party, leaving his government in a minority position. During a court proceeding in Michigan, it was disclosed that former President Donald Trump is considered an unindicted co-conspirator in a state investigation into the 2020 election interference.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Mark, was there any talk about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, Wisconsin Republican, and that you know, that bill, House Bill S-444, I believe, which would have made sure the WHO Accord is treated like a actual treaty, which would, I guess, then mean it's subjected to constitutionally required supermajority of 2/3 of all senators present to decide whether to consent to a treaty? Was there anything like that? Are they looking to find ways around problems like this?
No, there was no mention of any national considerations or national political legislation. S-444 has been dormant over a year, not passed by the House, not passed by the Senate, not signed into law. And it's just very fundamental. Ron Johnson, a little over a year ago, was very noisy about it. He was making a lot of noise. Now he could not be quieter. I've called his office more than once to the media department. I can't even get a call back. And that's rather disquieting. The Senate has a clear role here, but if they don't recognize it as a treaty, then it could slip through kind of like NAFTA did and become an agreement. When NAFTA was at its essence a treaty. And so if you don't treat it for what it is, it won't have the government inspection or you know, overview of that we need and that our sovereignty involves. Part of sovereignty is for our government to exercise its sovereign powers to make a decision as to whether we would accede or you know, join into this pandemic agreement. There's lots of fundamentals that I could get into. I know we have a little extra time today compared to normal. One question, of course, is why is the Office of Global Affairs of DHHS even involved? They're part of the federal executive branch, which is to see that the laws are faithfully executed. I would think that a congressional delegation, if they're going to negotiate a treaty at all, somebody in from Congress representing the key committees having to do with healthcare would be the people that you'd want making policy, not executive branch employees from Health and Human Services. What are they even doing there, right? There's a question we could ask. Even just by being there, we're legitimizing the proceedings, you see. Ron Avery, a respected friend of mine who's very knowledgeable about civics, says, why are we even there? Let alone, you know, let alone what the Senate might do for advice and consent as required by the Constitution. You know, you're presuming that this is a lawful process, is it? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And I don't think that the founders foresaw a Congress ceding all of its authority to the executive branch and an executive branch that would call a treaty anything other than a treaty. We call them instruments. We call them agreements. We call them understandings. We call them everything except what they are, treaties, because the Constitution only uses that one word, treaty. It's almost a shame that they didn't add treaty or other agreement, instrument, or understanding in the language, because that's what these guys are doing. Now, Mark, I'm trained as a biologist, and one of the things that concerns me isn't only use of these vaccines on our children, although that concerns me greatly, but our food supply. One thing we've learned, you know, I'm trained as a biologist, and I was out there warning about this mRNA technology in April, May, June of 2020, well before it was even available. And everything we warned about has come true. Specifically, these lipid nanoparticles being found in post-mortem autopsies, unfortunately, in all tissues. Originally, they said it was only going to remain in the deltoid muscle, which they knew was a lie because these things had been invented to cross the blood-brain barrier to get chemotherapy drugs into the brain. They've been found in brain tissue, and in men, they've been found predominantly in the testes and in women in the ovaries, but also throughout all the body tissues. Why does that matter for our food supply? Because now they're talking about not allowing any cattle, dairy cattle or beef cattle, to go to market if they haven't been vaccinated with this, and they're going to do it for hogs and chickens and everything else. They're looking to poison our food supply with these persistent vaccines. So even if you decide in your personal autonomy that getting injected is not right for you, they don't care. They know you have to eat. They're even breeding them into genetically manipulating plants like lettuce and tomatoes and other vegetables to carry in their cells these bits of DNA. They want everybody to carry them.
Well, I'd like to learn more about how that works, but that's a very profound thing to consider in light of what's going on. Of course, the key thing now, and we can sort of cut to the chase just a little, is the although it might sound like an insurmountable thing to get these people to listen, but there is the article that Brian cited at the beginning of the show. There's a lot of contact and the contact info. And the most important thing is a listening session is going to be held. This article says Thursday, May 2nd. I believe it's actually Friday, May 3rd. That may be a typo. I'm going to check that before we're done here. But the listening session is supposed to be a week from tomorrow, and you need to RSVP, however, by tomorrow at a email that's given in the article that Brian referred to, oga.rsvp1@hhs.gov. RSVP by tomorrow, do it early because they're spending a lot of time in Switzerland where it's 7 hours later than U.S. Eastern time, something like that, and say that you want to be involved in the listening session. You can go to James Roguski, the WHO watchdog, his website, jamesroguski.substack.com, Roguski, R-O-G-U-S-K-I, and he's got a lot of good advice there and a lot of good talking points, including, as he's talked about over the last few months and weeks, have the participating nations, this is a question, have they had the required amount of time as the WHO's own rules require? Have they had the required amount of time to even be reviewing the proposed international health regulations and the planks that go in the treaty? Each participating country is supposed to have a certain amount of time to review what's going on before the World Health Assembly, May 27th through June 1st, the 77th such assembly, and that's when they would supposedly craft the treaty or put it together. So there's all these questions. You can conduct or go to his Substack website, rather, his blog, and this article that I referred to here. But the main thing is to RSVP by tomorrow. Today would be better, anytime during the evening or whatever, and or early in the morning tomorrow, to that email, oga.rsvp1@hhs.gov, and say you want to be part of the listening session. And there's people can also write to me if they'd like at truthhound2@yahoo.com, Brian, T-R-U-T-H-H-O-U-N-D, the numeral 2 at yahoo.com, if they want some input on what to write and how to structure it. But I already sent it in, and I'm going to try and be part of the listening session where I would actually be allowed to comment, not just listen. You can indicate which way you want to go. And so the article that you cited, Brian, and James Roguski's information, with just a little bit of research, you can glean how to do this. And if I get called on, if I can actually take part a week from tomorrow, I'll find that out. And then I would report on that and how that went, Brian, and whether I got a chance to listen in and talk, whether they're actually going to honor that. And if so, what I had to say or what I heard. So there's a bit to unpack here, but we're up against the deadline, and it's all hands on deck to get public opinion out there so they know that people are listening, so they know we're paying attention.
Yeah, yeah, it's an all hands on deck moment here. You know, this is a big one. This they've got April 29 to May 10, the last meeting of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Body to negotiate the pandemic treaty. May 27 to June 1, the 77th World Health Assembly in Geneva, where I assume they'll be signing this thing. Is that what's going to happen in Geneva?
If they don't have too many outstanding disagreements, if they have their ducks in a row. And James Roguski, early on, he claimed with pretty good evidence that they were kind of stacking the deck and cutting corners to make it look like they were abiding by their own rules, so each nation gets enough review time and all these different things. But it looked to him, and it looked to me too, like they were cutting corners back then, say January, early February, to try and make this a fait accompli, a foregone conclusion, but sort of bend the rules and cut corners along the way, their own rules, by the way. And so it's very problematic in that sense.
Yeah, and you've flagged up the bending of rules right here with this report today here on State of the Nation, and that you've put out over at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, that's called Get Involved Now, Key Contracts, Key Contacts, Background Info on Imminent Pandemic Treaty Health Regs. We're going to take a brief break here, Mark, and when we come back, we'll pick up right where we left off. I want to talk a little bit more about the machinations of the actual agreement and things we might need to keep in mind about the WHO in general, who they're associated with, and what their aims are on the geopolitical chessboard. Here at State of the Nation, this is TNT.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything, they're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
So the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit, and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
All right, Mark, one of the things that James Roguski has written here, there's a huge profiteering scheme via Big Pharma, the WHO, etc., that would be cemented together by the approval of the pandemic treaty, thereby creating what Roguski has characterized as a massive pharmaceutical monopoly on par with the well-known OPEC cartel in the energy realm. And there's an editor's note in here also talking about sort of the WHO and what they're associated with. Do you want to underline that a little bit?
Yeah, that's what James has been saying. I haven't looked into that aspect of it as deeply as I'd like, but all the indications are that it's true, that And the press conference I covered yesterday more or less infers that's true, in that they were making vaccines such a one-size-fits-all centerpiece of everything, and the great catch-up to get the kids who weren't vaccinated the first time, get caught up with that and get them vaccinated, the adults too, everyone everywhere. These words were constantly used. So that obviously would make Big Pharma even more mountainously and ionospherically profitable than they already are. And that would suggest that that could very well lead to a cartel of pharmaceutical companies, which is already kind of how they are, like the media too. You know, the media at first glance might not look like a cartel, but in a lot of ways it is an informational cartel. But this would basically give a big nudge to the way Big Pharma is already looking, you know, more and more like all these companies that seem to be competitors are really operating as one: GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, AbbVie, Pfizer, and so on. You know, it's all the same, excuse me, the same mentality, the same worldview, that vaccines are the answer to all our ills.
Is there anyone with any power, any juice, that's speaking up for the millions of people around the world who are dead because of these gene therapy injections?
Not that I'm aware of, in terms of someone that's a, you know, pretty big persona, you know, someone that's really dominating the airwaves, being the, you know, the populist spokesman, really tearing into Big Pharma here. I think it's going to be a lot of littler people like ourselves, and I'm not belittling any of us at all, not by any stretch. It's going to take all of us to get involved. That's why we're having this show today. They need to hear voices out there and hear diverse opinions, but a opposing opinion. They need to hear some dissent, because within their own ranks, dissent is not tolerated. That was so evident yesterday at that press conference, that they are so emboldened and dedicated to one point of view. And that's going to, you know, by definition, sooner or later, it's going to guarantee profits on an even greater scale to Big Pharma, which will become even more dominant and could very well form the OPEC of Big Pharma companies, as James Roguski predicts. And there's evidence that he's seen to support that.
And Mark, how does this affect other countries? How does this affect Australia and UK, Germany, South America? I mean, what are we looking at on the geopolitical scale for some of our friends and allies around the globe?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, Brian. I do know that they talk at the WHO press conferences, and Roguski's written about it, and I've studied it and written about it. They want to put lots of surveillance operational stations throughout the world in different countries to look for the first signs of zoonotic transmission of a would-be pandemic pathogen. The big one on the list right now is H5N1, a bird flu. And I've seen people write emails to me and to others that are scoffing, you know, since when is the flu in and of itself really considered all that deadly on a worldwide pandemic scale? You know, they see it as a lot of fear mongering, which it very likely is. But that is one thing that would affect all countries, is the WHO operates on the premise that it has license to put these listening stations. I suppose that technically they'd get the permission of the host country, but put these surveillance stations, that is, throughout the world to look for animal to human zoonotic transmission, and H5N1 being at the top of the list. But they're rolling out vaccines against, again, about everything, dengue and malaria. One of the first malaria vaccines is going into Africa, and they want to make sure they get kids ages 6 to 16. And I'm not saying malaria is not serious. I'm not saying dengue is not serious. These are dangerous illnesses. And might some of those vaccines actually work? It is possible. But it's the worldview, it's the ideology behind it, is they don't tolerate dissent, and they don't recognize much, if anything, in the way of alternative modality treatments. They don't talk about nutrition. They certainly haven't talked about nutrition at the press conferences I've covered much, if at all, sanitation and so on. You know, there's an old saying that trash collectors and plumbers have prevented more diseases than doctors. And so sanitation and the lack of contamination is extremely important. It's not just a matter of jabbing people. It's a matter of healthy organic agriculture. It's a matter of a good diet and lots of different things. It's not just getting jabbed. Even if vaccines were the greatest thing in the world, it's not only about them.
Well, also, there's the matter of the tens of millions of children that were murdered by Bill Gates and his vaccination program in India and in Africa. The track record for vaccinations in the developing world is horrific.
It is. And one of the first speakers at the press conference was Violin Michel of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So it wasn't all WHO apparatchiks. They're rolling out the big guns here. She talked about Gavi, G-A-V-I, which we're familiar with, an organization there about vaccinations, wanting to vaccinate more than 1 billion children. And Africa was a frequently referred to region for these things. And she was extremely one-minded. She called for the recognition of field workers, those that administer vaccines in the field, who work to vaccinate all children everywhere, quote unquote. This language just kept coming up. Who recognize the field workers who work to vaccinate all children everywhere, this Gates Foundation lady was talking about. And then Tedros, the director general of the WHO, I'm reading right from my notes, the world's first malaria vaccine is being rolled out in Africa, in Burkina Faso, and several other African countries, and so on and so forth. And gender equity was even cited in treating malaria by Tedros. What does gender equity have to do with treating malaria with vaccines? I don't know. And so you have this kind of wokeness creeping into it. And this is just more of what they're talking about. And more support is needed, they said, from donors, private donors, not just taxpayers, even though taxpayers pay the bulk of the bill. And the WHO is dedicated, Tedros said, to the life-saving nature of vaccinating everyone everywhere, quote, end quote.
Well, isn't that special? No, you know, forget getting people everywhere clean water. Forget getting leaving no kids left behind when it comes to food or education or, you know, safety or a roof over their head. It's just amazing. And I have to assume that when you're talking about or when they're talking about malaria, dengue, all these other things, they're talking about mRNA shots. They're not even talking about actual vaccines, because we know they changed the definition of vaccine to accommodate this experimental gene therapy with mRNA. And apparently they think they've gotten away with just pulling the wool over everybody's eyes or bludgeoning everybody into believing that this stuff that was developed at the Pentagon is actually something that was quickly developed in the crisis of 2020 and distributed in 2021 and hasn't hurt anybody to speak of, never mind the yellow card system, the VAERS system, and the fact that nobody knows anyone who hasn't had myocarditis at this point.
Well, Brian, you see, if you get everybody exactly. vaccinated, you don't have to worry about feeding and clothing and sheltering the children, because there won't be any children to feed, clothe, and shelter.
and to be objective, they have had other programs and press conferences and announcements where they do sometimes talk about sanitation, food, and these things, but not pretty much at the same, not much, if at all, at the same time when they're pushing the vaccine juggernaut. That becomes just a single-minded crusade, a messianic thing for them. And I don't know for sure, Brian, to address what you said, if they're all going to be mRNA-style injections. There could be some that are structured more like traditional vaccines. I don't know that yet. But again, it's the ideology and the worldview that vaccinations are the answer to everything. And common sense, we all grew up knowing that's not the case, that it's good health is a range of things, from nutrition to good sleep, to shelter, to good sanitation, across the board. Vaccines actually have played a relatively small role in human health if you look back over a longer period of time in history. It was more like babies should be breastfed because breastfed babies have better immunity and take your cod liver oil and your mineral oil for constipation perhaps, and you know, do what mommy says, and you know, none of it was dangerous or highly experimental drugs or strange you know, exotic technologies called mRNA. It was all just common sense, good health. When we were growing up, we could get into fluoride as another weird turn in human affairs, but we'll leave fluoride for another time. But anyway, it all points to that we've got a real problem on our hands, and we can only hope that they have enough problems on their hands reaching an agreement, an argument among globalists. That'd be something for a fly on the wall to hear. I wonder what they even argue about, right? What is there to disagree over? anyway, yeah, we're at a real pivotal time here in recent and longer range history.
Yeah, we absolutely are. And again, public comments are now being accepted. So if this is resonating with you, this is your chance to get in there and make some public comments to these people, to these crazy people who think that they can tell the global citizenry what kind of medicines they should take, what kind of injection products they should put inside their bodies. I mean, the success record, the claims of efficacy and necessity and safety are beyond questionable at this point. They were lies. Lots of people know it now. Mark, so again, it's just it's important that people get on out there and do that. And your article has all the links. It's got the times in it. If there's a typo in there, it's going to be fixed probably before we even get off air here. So I just want to shout that out again so that you can get over there and check it out. Get involved now. Key contacts, background info on Imminent Pandemic Treaty by Mark Anderson. It's up over at republicbroadcasting.org. And Mark, what's next in this for you? So you're going to be covering one more of these things for us, and then what? Do we have to send you to Switzerland or something like that?
I would be very happy if somebody sent me to Switzerland, a beautiful place other than what's going on there. Really just to keep following and covering the WHO press conferences, which are very, very frequent right now. They're having many, many, many more press conferences. And if anybody wants to contact me, again, truthhound2@yahoo.com, T-R-U-T-H-H-O-U-N-D, the numeral 2 at yahoo.com, or contact TNT Radio and they can send me a note. I can send you the email that I sent to RSVP. I sent it yesterday to meet tomorrow's deadline so I can try and be part of the listening session, at least get to listen in real time, but hopefully get to speak, which I kind of doubt will happen. I don't have much faith in the democratic impulses of these people, but maybe they've got a few rules even they have to follow. So we'll see.
Well, that would be nice for a change, right? We've got a couple minutes left. Do you have any final thoughts, Mark?
Well, I can't stress the importance enough about this issue. It's clear that the individual initiative that arose in the 2020 pandemic, when people began to balk at this and say, look, I have rights. You can't fire me because I won't take the jab. You can't deny me a job. You can't not hire me because I won't take the jab. There are rights. There's HIPAA laws. You can't ask me personal things. I have medical autonomy. And nations also, sovereign nations, have decisions they can make and only they can make without anyone telling them what to do directly or indirectly sooner or later. So there was a lot of exercise of personal and national and subnational autonomy. You know, states and counties were balking, saying we can't be part of this forced jab, forced vaccination thing. And I believe, my opinion, that they're trying to squelch that with this treaty and these regs.
I think you're absolutely right. That is the impulse behind this. Thank you for all of your great work, Mark Anderson. Keep us informed. We're going to be keeping a close eye on this. And folks, if you can participate, participate. Now is the time not to throw up your hands in frustration. Now is the time to roll up your sleeves and get to work. That's it for tonight's State of the Nation here on Today's News Talk. Stay tuned for the Jason Burma Show. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.